You won't find a better deal on science-backed pregnancy supplements than at Ritual's Black Friday sale. Get what you really deserve, like a prenatal you can trust. Made with bioavailable key nutrients, it even earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. Save 40% on your first month at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Power Talk. And on this episode, I'm joined by Chris and Dean of the Wandering Road podcast, and we're going to talk a little bit about their podcast and some of their experiences. I'm going to start with you, Chris. Just give the listeners a little bit about who you are and what your podcast is about and how you came to be.
So everyone, my name is Chris. I am the host and founder of the Wandering Road podcast. So a little bit about me. The podcast is based out of two locations. I am in Western Pennsylvania, and my co-host Dean is situated out in Hawaii. And basically, our podcast, we cover a whole range of topics: strange, paranormal, true crime. And also, we got into the knack of having people come onto our show to share their paranormal experiences. So when I started it, I was solo at the time. I was like, everybody has a podcast. I've listened to podcasts for years and I've always wanted to do one. It started off with talking about like a range of topics, and then I got into the creepy part of it, and it kind of took off from there. And I brought Dean on and we just worked well together. And I was like, dude, we should just make this a permanent thing and just, you know, co-host together.
So Dean, a little bit about yourself. What's your role in the whole podcast side of things?
So Chris, exactly what Chris was saying, he started this podcast. And so he and I have been really good friends for a long time. We actually went to school together in Western Pennsylvania. And we kind of like touched base every once in a while after we moved apart. But he basically reached out to me one day. He's like, hey, do you want to come on this podcast that I'm doing? And we talk about this and that. And in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I've kind of been thinking about starting a podcast for a while. Like, I was kind of talking to my wife about it. It's like, what if we did something about our move to Hawaii and like family here and stuff? And it just never panned out. But Chris opened up that opportunity. And when I jumped on and was talking to him, I really never had a chance to talk to him to that degree in many years. And I realized that we had so much in common and we had a good flow, and we both love talking about this philosophical / paranormal / cryptid, whatever, strange stuff. Like, we're just really into that aspect of life in general. So we just started recording episode after episode, and here we are like 70 plus episodes later. It's been crazy and we're still chugging away at it. But what I really bring to the table, I think, so Chris brings the experiences to the table and he talks about them very well, and we'll talk about them on the show. Me, I believe in this sort of thing. I think that there is something strange that happens in life beyond what we can understand or measure right now. But for me, I'm more like trying to play devil skeptic, if that's even a thing, but like, you know, not really trying to throw shade at him or throw shade at other people for their experiences, but kind of like poking and like asking questions. Well, what about this? What about that? What do you think it was this? Do you think it was that? That's kind of the flavor I bring. And I think we have a really good balance, but personally, I haven't had too many paranormal experiences directly, but I have had a lot of times in my life where you kind of have those coincidences pop up and you look up at the sky and you're like, really? So I can talk about those a little bit, sort of thing. But yeah, I'll toss it back to you guys.
I'm going to throw this over to you, Chris. Where did it all start? Where did your interest in this sort of happen?
Wow. That is a good question, Reeves, because it starts as far back as I can remember. And it mainly has to do with my upbringing and what I experienced personally with the paranormal. I would say things that I couldn't understand at the time. So, I mean, as a kid, my first movie I ever watched that was a horror movie was The Exorcist. That was like my introduction into paranormal films. Funny story, my cousin back in the day when you would buy like, I don't know, VHSs or whatever, he happened to get a copy of The Exorcist and none of our parents were home. He was like, hey, you want to watch this movie? And ever since then, like, it just took off with me being interested in bunch of scary stuff. I like to say like The Exorcist was like the gateway to it, because personally to me, that's one of the best horror movies ever made. And it's very difficult to find that scare factor again amongst other films. Like The Exorcist is just top notch for me. Aside from The Exorcist being like my gateway into like the TV shows and the movies, there were always things on television like The X-Files, Unsolved Mysteries. Back in the day in the 90s, there was this show called The Unknown. And I think it was on the Discovery Channel here in the States. And they would talk about the Headless Horseman and ghosts and all these different things. So I was always drawn to that, albeit, you know, being like a 5-6 year old child. You know, you scare the hell out of yourself. And but I still persisted and watched it. But when it comes to my paranormal experiences in general, I did grow up in New York City. I first grew up in the Bronx. And then when I was a little bit older, still a child, I ended up moving to Queens. When I lived in the Bronx, the earliest thing that I could remember, it's still weird to me till this day because I remember it so vividly. Sometimes I tell myself it was a dream. So essentially what happened was I was probably 5 to 6 years old at the time. I woke up around maybe 2 to 3 a.m. and I sit up in bed and I look to my right. And the way that the bedroom was situated in the apartment that we lived in the Bronx, or as you folks call it, the flat. My flat that I lived in.
Yeah, your flat.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you would walk into the room, the bedroom, it was just one big bedroom. All of our beds were on the right with my sister's crib closest to the door, my parents' bed in the middle of the room towards the wall.
Like a studio apartment.
Kind of, yeah. That's what the bedroom itself was like.
Okay.
We still had like a living room and all that other stuff. But in there, like all the beds were to the right, up against the wall. And on the other side of the room was the dresser, TV stand, etc. And there was one big window. So I wake up, I look to my right, and I see these like gnome dwarfish looking type of creatures. I couldn't get like a distinct look at them because it was kind of like the outline of their shadows. So me being 5-6 years old at the time, I look at them and I'm like, I start screaming at them like, you're not supposed to be in here. Get out of here. Get out of my room. Like, you don't belong here. Yada, yada, yada. And then my mom wakes up and she's like, Chris, what are you doing? Why are you screaming? There's nothing there. I'm like, what do you mean, Mom? What do you mean there's nothing there? I see them right there. I turn and look, and they're not there anymore. So you think it would be the imagination of a kid. Like, you know, you had a bad dream, you wake up, you look over, and you're probably in your dream state, and you see something that's in your dream. That's what I thought it was. So I always thought it was that. And what's crazy is that a few weeks ago, I was speaking with my mom on the phone, and I happened to bring up this topic, And I was like, hey, mom, do you remember when I was younger that I woke up and I pointed and was screaming at some, like, whatever, the duendes, we could call them, because in Hispanic and Latino culture, that's what we refer to them as. And she's like, and I'm like, do you remember that when I did that? And she was like, oh, yeah, I do. The one time I was in the living room with your sister because she kept crying and I didn't want her to wake up your dad because he had to get up for work in a few hours. I'm like, no, you were in bed this time. And she's like, no, that's not the first time you did that. She's like, the one time that she distinctly remembers that I woke up and I was crying and I was saying something about it. And she's like, and I was like, they're going to get me. They're going to get me. And she ended up sleeping in the bed with me, saying, consoling me, saying like, no, they're not going to get you. I'm not going to let anything get you.
It sounds very much like, as I say, like the whole, like the fairy folk, the night visitors and stuff like that. These little people in their homes. And yeah, it is, I mean, there's podcasts out there that talk about it, and it's kind of real creepy stuff. But moving over, I want to move over to Dean a minute, and I want to find out, what were your experiences growing up? And anything sort of influenced you?
Sure, and I think this is an awesome opportunity to add some other flavor to Chris's story. So I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and it wasn't quite out in the boons or like out in the woods or whatever. It was kind of like in the middle. It was like you could drive to a town that was suburby, but we were kind of also in between out there in the wilderness. So I did get a flavor of both worlds for a while, and that was really great. But a lot of my youth was spent outside, and like Chris said, I also really like to watch shows like X-Files and like sci-fi stuff. Like I was really into that when I was a kid, and so was my mom, coincidentally, my family. So I guess I did grow up around that kind of mysterious culture, so to speak. But what's interesting is while I have had some strange occurrences when I was younger, like for instance, my youngest supernatural-ish memory is when I was like 2 or 3 years old, I remember sitting in my mom's living room. And this is like, obviously, I can't even trust this memory for sure. I remember having, like, I think about this, I've thought about this for many, many years. So I know it's a real memory. It's not one I just made up off the top of my head like a few years ago. I've been thinking about this since my adolescence, but like, I remember when I was really young, 2, 3 years old, I was sitting in my mom's, this might actually be my first memory, sitting in my mom's living room. And I just remember staring at the corner, like the corner of the room, but like not the wall corner. It's like the very top of where the ceiling and the wall, that the corners of the room where it meets at the very top. And I remember staring up there and just seeing this orb of light just growing out from that corner, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was just like sitting there for a while. And then, and that was it. And, you know, if I want to get really like philosophical, I wonder to this day, like, I wonder like what it's like when you come online as a kid, like does something enter you that brings you your consciousness? Like at what point when you become conscious, like, do you get your soul? Like, I know some people think that like your soul doesn't come into you until you're much older, which I'm not saying I believe, but that's just something that I've thought about off and on and I'm willing to talk more about. But switching from the paranormal, I think I've had more experiences with like UFO related stuff, being out in the middle of nowhere. So I can pepper this in later. I don't want to take too much time in the beginning, but if it gets to the topic of UFOs and stuff, I do have some handful of sightings I've had when I was younger and some weird things that happened, including a vision that I woke up to one morning when I was about 9 or 10 years old. So I'll just shut it off there. That's my intro, and we can explore those later or get into something else.
UFOs, yeah, definitely interesting. I think we're both on the same page when it comes to that, because I did have a sighting many years ago, and it stuck with me all these years like it happened yesterday. So yeah, I'm interested to hear those. Now that everyone gets a little bit of a feel for who you are and what you're all about, I was going to ask Chris, when it comes to the subject of ghosts and the paranormal, do you have a kind of a preset kind of theory as to what we might be dealing with in the realms of, is it granddad that's come back to tell us that is multi-millions and millions of pounds of savings is hidden away somewhere, or is it something else? Maybe someone, a trickster, maybe something else is having a laugh with us. What's your thoughts on that kind of scenario?
So that's interesting because I go back and forth a lot in my own head about that. At one point, you're like, okay, is it something more, I don't want to say nefarious, but it can be. Is it something, you know, trying to mess with us within like another dimension that we can't see, that they can see, that they can interact with us? But to me, I think that with the ghosts and paranormal and demons and stuff like that, I personally think that some ghosts are folks that have passed away, but for some reason they are stuck to this realm or reality. And when it comes to demons, I think that they are real. I think not in the same sense that Christianity describes them, but I think there's something more powerful. They could be elemental, stronger spirits, kind of like the ancient Greeks used to call them, with daemons. Like they're like these spirits that are stronger than anything else, and they can interact with people, and they can possess people, and they can do things to harm people. I feel like I didn't answer your question, but
there is a part two to what I was going to say. Was you did kind of answer my question, but I was going to add to it. When you look at paranormal, ghosts, life after death, it all does fall under that kind of umbrella of religion. I think that when we look at the world as it is, I think maybe in some way, you know, there's nefarious individuals out there that are trying to change things. I don't know. Maybe the whole paranormal thing, maybe it's all wrapped up together.
Yeah, it might be. Dean and I actually did an episode about, what was it, Dean? We talked about souls and the concept of reincarnation and people coming back. And like, we came up with this idea, obviously, I'm sure other people, we talked about this idea of the concept of when someone dies, that you're immediately connected to this overall consciousness where you gain all of this knowledge. And like, if there are past lives, all of that just comes back to you in some form or fashion, like where it's all interconnected. But what's interesting is that when you bring the religious side into that, because there are things like there are exorcisms, there's the Islamic version of exorcisms. You know, when you see stuff like that happening, it's kind of difficult to, I would say, argue against it. Obviously, there are cases like the case of Annalise Michel in Germany, in which she had a mental illness. And there's a father that I talk to every now and then, and he says that you can't cast out mental illness. So I think that's why exorcisms are probably not as prevalent as they used to be. Because in some of the research I did, when you go to a priest, this is specifically with Catholicism, I'm not sure what the other religions do, they usually have a medical team that will evaluate you. They will have you medically evaluated before they even practice any type of rite of exorcism. So then that just brings up more questions of what is real and what isn't, in that sense.
What are your thoughts, Dean?
I always go, when it gets this philosophical, I can't help but go a little heavy. And so I know this isn't going to resonate with some people out there, maybe a lot of people, but I think the two perspectives that I think about when we talk about stuff like this, for instance, the possible satanic stuff that some people purport, you know, becoming more prevalent in the world and stuff, I can't help but think about other cultures and religions who just have no cards in that game whatsoever. And I think as human beings, we have a tendency to talk about things within our own spheres of like our own inclusion within our own spheres. And I think it's normal. I mean, I'm not saying it's abnormal. I think it's part of the human experience and culturalism and tribalism going all the way back to like our ancestors and stuff. Like, you can't just think about the whole world all the time. But as things kind of shrink and globalization has, you know, shrunk things, so to speak, it's become easier, I think, if you want to make an effort to kind of immerse yourself in other cultures. But it's clear that humans don't want to do that, or a lot of humans don't want to do that because it doesn't feel safe. There's a lot of psychological reasons behind it. I would err more on the side of misunderstanding more so than some, you know, global cabal who is worshiping Satan or something, when a huge portion of the world, like say Buddhism or Hinduism, like they don't have any connection, or like there are really powerful people in other religions who control media and do all kinds of other things. They're just not within our westernized sphere that touches on Christianity and stuff like that. So I think that at the very end of the day, it comes down to misunderstanding. But I also think that it's very clear that there are people who believe in satanic stuff and they really are trying to contact the devil and worship the devil and stuff like that. That's a real thing. But my thing is, I don't know to what degree that actually has an impact on our reality. But then to the other flip side of the question, I think the other thing to consider is whenever people have these experiences, there is clearly something strange going on. Like I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I can will away or explain away all of these strange things, especially like let's say for example, exorcisms. I mean, I've done research with Chris too and seen some really compelling cases of people claiming to be possessed by some evil entity or evil spirit. And then someone comes along who has some kind of ancient knowledge or they have some kind of religious practice and they're able to dispel that. I think that there are some really weird things that happen in this world. And then when you actually accept that and you acknowledge that, then the next part of the question is what's really going on the underlying fabric. And then, like, you know, Chris was saying, when we pass away, I think the heavy concept that we all have to kind of think about in this life is, do we really continue on? Does the self really continue on to the next life? And I would say, like, I don't know, but I can also imagine an afterlife where, like Chris said, we kind of reassimilate our consciousness into a larger conscious pool, and then it ends up in reality, like we're all just sharing these experiences and they're all just going back to this massive collective. That's really heavy to talk about, right? Because like if you think about that, you're kind of also losing your individuality if you return to something like that. So I think that's why not to skip ahead too far, but I think that's why some people have such a hard time thinking about these heavy concepts, is because at the end of the day, like some part of you is going to go away when you die. And that's like, that's like a holy shit moment. Like no one wants to dwell on that for too long.
I just wanted to add, and I'll keep it brief because, you know, I don't want to waffle on. People will be like, oh, he's talking again. But when we talk about stuff like that, here's the thing that always kind of plays on my head. When your day comes, when your number's up, I sometimes think, well, you may go to sleep and that will be it, and there'll be nothing more. So you haven't really lost anything because you're kind of checking out and you're not going to be aware of anything. It's just going like going to bed and you're going to sleep. You don't have a dream. You just, that is it, nothing. Or you might sort of end your days here and check out and then wake up somewhere else and think, oh, I wasn't expecting this. Whatever happens from that point on. Or I think the most scary, that is it. Annihilation. You no longer exist. Everything that you've done, everything that you've achieved, everyone you've ever known means nothing because you no longer exist. That's it. You're just a name on a plaque in a field somewhere. And that's it. For me, that stayed with me ever since I went to my first auntie whatever passed away, and I went to a funeral and I couldn't really understand, because I was a little kid, I couldn't really understand what was going on. I thought, why are all these people standing around in, like, you know, suits and stuff, and why is everybody upset, and what's in that box? I didn't really get it as a little kid. And of course, you know, then my mum explained to me that, you know, my auntie had passed away and she was being buried and stuff, and I'm like, you know, and then that played on me a little bit, thinking, what is that? Is there an end to this? Does this end? Don't we go on forever?
Too heavy.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I say real quick?
Yeah, really quickly, go ahead.
I was in the same exact boat you are for years and years and years, where that thought was like the most terrifying thing that I could ever conceive of. However, in the last like 3 or 4 years or so, with the advent of like artificial technology and like shows like Black Mirror, mm-hmm. where like you talk about someone getting stuck in a clock, had like a there was an episode where the girl got duplicated by herself and she was stuck in this like machine in the house that would do everything for her, but her whole conscious awareness was literally replicated but stuck in that box. And the way that you broke that was by putting them under this crazy thing where like you know 2 seconds is like 100 years or something. And that kind of that, like, people think that there is a possibility that we live in a virtual reality right now. And the question is, who are the controllers of that virtual reality? Is it purely for fun? Is it for, you know, you'd like to think that if it was something like maybe at least testing certain outcomes for whatever scientific purposes. But if it really is just a bunch of kids messing around, then we're screwed. That kind of thought to me has become so heavy in my mind over the last few years about what the nature of reality could be and who is actually in charge of it. So I actually kind of welcome now, like, oh, you mean there's like no, so for me now, it's no longer as scary that there's just nothing after, because that sounds a little bit better than being trapped in a box, poked by a stick, by some like, you know, quantum inner quantum child or something who's just, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that after I said that?
Well, I want to hear what Chris has got to say.
That concept scares the hell out of me. And yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat of being exposed to, death early on as well. The first funeral I went to was my grandfather, and it was open casket and everything. I was probably 12 or 13 years old at the time. And like you, Reeves and Dean, that whole concept just like lingers in my mind as well. As like, what happens after this? Do I just erase forever? And it gave me like a type of anxiety, thinking about that. It still does to this day, you know, because you just be laying in bed and it's like, damn, one day it's just all going to be gone. Like, what's going to happen afterward? I don't know. And like you, Dean, the worst thing that it could be is, so this is all an experiment, and we're all dealing with all this bull crap for no reason, apparently only for someone's amusement or enjoyment in sort of cosmic level.
Well,
sorry guys, I just shit on the whole episode. I just made it so depressing for everybody. No,
you got to remember that we might just be sea monkeys. Do you remember sea monkeys? Am I showing my age?
No, I remember those ordering on the back of the magazine.
Yep. Back in the 70s, you get a little pack of sea monkeys in the comic, you send off for it, and you get your little packet back, put them in the water, and now you got little sea monkeys, and you are the king. It showed you the picture of the king and the queen and all the little children. They weren't like that. They were like little amoeba things floating around. I'm just using that as a metaphor, but maybe we are. Maybe we're in a little glass jar somewhere on a shelf, or maybe we're on a hard drive somewhere running a program. We're doing our thing, and we think everything's real. This is the way I look at it. Some people say, "Well, that's complete rubbish. You're talking nonsense because I know who I am." Well, of course you know who you are, because that's what your program's telling you to think. It's telling you to see all this stuff, and it's all real, because is you're part of the simulation, or is there something else going on there?
I think what you're touching on as well is something that I think it seems like more and more people, like at least on social media within this type of realm that we're talking about, like paranormal and stuff, are picking up on. And that is, you don't really know if even other consciousnesses in this life are actually just like you. You know, like there's no way to know if, because the only, like what's, I think, is it Descartes or someone, there's some philosophical concept out there that's been around for a long time now, but essentially they're playing at this idea that there's no way for you to prove any consciousness or sensation outside of your own. Like if you truly are a consciousness sitting there, the only thing you can check yourself on is that you are aware of yourself. And then once that's it, you hit a wall. Like you cannot prove with 100% certainty that things you're touching and feeling are not being, there's not some massive effort to trick you into thinking you're actually touching or feeling, just like in your dreams. You know, like we've all had dreams, or most of us have had dreams where they feel real and you're living this other life, or you're living this experience in your dream. And then you wake up, and then the first few seconds, you can still kind of remember how real it felt until you actually come back to the ultimate reality that you are experiencing. Like, oh, then when you wake up, you're like, oh, okay, I see. Like this I can feel now. This is the real reality. And I think, like, not to get too like spiritual, but I think that maybe when you die, that's possibly also what happens. Like, this is kind of just like a going through the motions sort of life lesson sort of thing. And then when you wake up, like Chris was saying, you have a higher level awareness that kind of shakes off this dreamlike state that we've experienced here. But to go back to one more point before I flip it to Chris, that Reeves, you touched on, I think if we were ever to really explore what's going on in reality, I think you hit the nail on the head. Asking the question, why are people experiencing all like whole range of strange things that don't seem to, they don't seem like they should exist in the same reality? Like, some people are experiencing physical cryptid creatures that don't align with evolution or physical existence of animals or whatever. And then you also have people who are experiencing ghosts and ghouls and demons who are supposed to be coming from this other plane of existence that's tied to a religious aspect of reality. And then even beyond that, you have people who are experiencing UFOs and aliens being abducted by them, and they look like us. They look like they're a million years evolved beyond us, but they're physical beings, and there's no real spiritualness to that. They're just physical beings who are beyond us. So if people are having this full range of experiences in this reality on Earth, I think that that's the answer. Like, there's something more to, and I think, like, not to get ahead of myself, but I think that a solution is maybe we are living in a simulation where all of these things can simultaneously exist and they do play out. But then the question is, like you said, Reeves, like, who's pulling the strings to control this big narrative?
Yeah, Chris, any thoughts?
I was just so entrenched in listening to what you had to say, to be honest with you.
I'm going to add a little bit to this. I was going to ask you about, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know, Abominable Snowman. I'm going to throw this to Chris, actually.
I personally think that Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the Abominable Snowman, they call them in Australia Yowies. They have a whole range of names. Yeah, I personally think they do exist, but they have developed such great survival skills that they know how to blend into the environment and to avoid people. I think they have to be fairly intelligent, because if they observe humans and see how we are and see how we hunt things and all that other stuff that we do when people go out into the woods and all these different things, I think they're wise to stay away.
What are your thoughts, Dean?
I'm pretty similar to Chris in thinking when it comes to like Bigfoot, and when it comes to other cryptids, I'm not so sure, because I don't know. I think when you talk about any cryptid, including Bigfoot, I don't think you can talk about them really without discussing the concept that they might be linked to some kind of paranormal activity. Or I know even some people think that Bigfoot is tied to extraterrestrial activity. But that's my thought on the whole Bigfoot thing, which is, you have these creatures who, like, let's just say hypothetically they're real, and based off of what we know about them, they seem more intelligent than like a group of primates. Because a group of primates, like, they don't have any, like, they know how to run and hide in trees and stuff, but they don't really have any savvy when it comes to going beyond that. So, you know, it's pretty easy to find primates in the forest. But you're talking about something that is so elusive that maybe some people have gotten lucky capturing their footprints or getting them on camera or whatever. But you're talking about years and years and years and years of people like trying to search for these things, people with a lot of money going out with really high tech technology looking for these things. And that's not me saying that I don't think they're real. That's me saying that I think that they have some help. I think that they're, whether that help is in the form of paranormal or extraterrestrial or even like governmental, I don't know why the government would want to hide that, but somebody or something, I think, would have to be obfuscating them from, because when you're getting to a certain point of people running into them in the forest and having these stories, but then they don't have any proof, but you have so many experiences where people are sharing those with other people, that it seems like a time and a place sort of thing, like that, like whatever's protecting them is not going to let humanity get beyond that one-off every once in a while where someone runs into them in the forest. Like, they're not, something is going to help them to the point where, like, these creatures are not going to be captured, dragged back to society and studied. So you could take that for what it's worth, I guess. But yeah, just the last thing I'll say is I think if there's a good likelihood that there's something out there that mimics or seems like looks like a Bigfoot, but I just don't know if it's actually purely physical. I would think that there would have to be some more to the physical nature.
I don't know if I could be one of these people that go out into the forests and into the wilderness and set up a tent and do a camp and go, oh, this is great. I'm going to play the radio, have a beer. No, I would be like, get as many lights on as possible, make as much noise as possible, and no one is sleeping, and make sure everyone's got a gun, because I'd be so scared. But, you know.
I'd be more scared of bears.
I think that, you know, when it comes to cryptids, we're only just scratching the surface when it comes to that sort of stuff. But I'm going to move on a little bit because we are rushing ahead of this podcast. But I was going to ask Dean. I'm going to throw this one over to Dean a minute, because we were talking about Bigfoot and, you know, the UFO connection, where that is another topic for another day, because there was so much there that you could talk about. But when it comes to the UFO connection, you've had a few encounters or sightings?
Thank God, not encounters. Except I'll save actually the one that might have been an encounter for last, because it's actually really, it's like one-on-one freaky. But it's, I personally don't. Yeah, it's your favorite one because, you know, lizard people and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, growing up, I lived, like I said, in Western Pennsylvania and kind of in between nowhere in the city. I would say, like, you know, when you're a kid, your mind can easily run wild, right? Like, it's just, we've all had that imagination thing. And I know that we've all made up stories at some point in our life as a kid, but this one, like, I vividly remember that this was a visual sighting. This wasn't just something that wasn't clear. It was hazy, et cetera. And actually my mom was there with me when we would see this phenomenon in the sky. But this happened on more than one occasion, and actually happened across multiple summers. And it only seemed to happen when things were kind of warming up. I don't know if that means anything, but we would look out on the horizon around like sometime between like 8 o'clock to 9:30 or whatever before I went to bed. And it was, you know, very dark out, obviously, but you're looking at the horizon, right? We would see these lights tracking across the sky over the horizon. And on first glance, like describing it, it's like, okay, it's just a freaking airplane. Like, what's the big deal? It's just an airplane with a landing light or whatever light they have on. But then the weird thing that would happen with these lights is they would keep traveling at a steady rate, and then they would stop. Like, just they would just stop and hover there for a good like 2 to 3 minutes. And then you're thinking, what's your next rational explanation? Oh, it's a helicopter. That's easy, right? But then the weirdest part would be that these lights would hover there, and then you'd see like two or three orbs of light emerge from that larger light. And these smaller lights would come out, and like one would go left back towards the original direction that the big light came from. And then one or two would go to the right or on an angle or something. They'd travel away from this bigger orb of light. And then, that's where, you know, obviously, you know, it starts getting harder to rationalize what's actually happening, because this was back in like the 90s, where I'm sure military, you know, I'm sure drones were around back then, but maybe not as advanced. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't flares, because flares don't travel in an upward motion. So the final crux that just puts the nail in the coffin for possible UFO is that these little lights that left the bigger light would return to the original source of light. Like, we would watch them travel back along the horizon, like about the same path and the same speed that they left the original light. And then they would go back up into it. And then that orb of light would continue on in the sky. And like, I've done so much research often, like every time that pops in my head, there was a point in my life where I was like just digging so hard, trying to figure out what technology could this have been that is owned by humans. And I could never find an answer to that. So that's the first one. The second one is probably a little bit more boring, but it's shorter. There was one night I was out in my mom's backyard in the springtime or something. It was warm enough to go out, lay in the grass, and I would love looking up at the stars and trying to see shooting stars or whatever. So I would lay out on this grassy little knoll in my mom's backyard, and big open sky, lots and lots of stars. And But this one particular night, it was really, really dark. There was cloud coverage, and it was not like the stars weren't out as much. I don't think it was, I think even it wasn't even a full moon. It was probably a new moon where there was no light. There was barely any light whatsoever. So I'm looking up at the sky and I just see this massive blob of black, this dark, huge spherical blob just floating over me, like directly over me. And at the time I'm thinking like, is that a hot air balloon or is that like, is that a blimp or something? And then I would look, I remember squinting at it, looking for some kind of canopy or one of those like little cockpits or whatever underneath. And there were no lights on it. There was no sign of a cockpit, nothing. It was just a huge spherical blob. And it was just tracking across the sky like it was a giant balloon, but it was so black, so dark, there was no light source that it clearly wasn't a cloud. Because I could see clouds around it and above it and stuff. And I just watched it go so, so slow over me and then just track over the horizon and just disappeared. So no idea what that could have been. And then my favorite, Chris's favorite, the very last experience, I was about 11 or 12. I was coming out of sleep at like 2 a.m. for some reason. I remember opening my eyes and looking in the corner of my room. And in the corner of my room was standing like a 6.5 or 7 foot tall lizard looking bipedal creature with these piercing eyes. I'm not going to say they were red. They're just piercing eyes. And they were just staring at me. And it wasn't moving, wasn't coming towards me. It was just watching me from the corner of the room. And I remember very vividly that I wasn't scared. Like I should have been scared as shit as a kid seeing that, but I wasn't scared. I just remember looking at it like it was just there. I watched it for like 2 or 3 minutes. And then I just remember drifting off to sleep. And then I wake up in the morning, like 7 or 8 a.m, my usual time. And then it just like the hot flash goes over me. Like, holy shit. I don't know what that was last night, but I will caveat being the traditional open-minded / skeptic. I also have had dreams where I've come out of a dream state and I've seen like the projection of hallucinations that clearly weren't there. Like I've seen giant spiders coming down over my bed. Clearly there were no giant spiders in Western Pennsylvania, the size of a frying pan. And I also saw Chucky the doll standing next to my bed one day when I woke up and I was coming out of sleep and he was just like staring at me maniacally. Clearly he wasn't really there. So I like to kind of think like without freaking myself out too much that maybe it was just a hallucinogenic dream thing, but it was very, very freaky that I remember looking at it, not feeling scared, and then falling back asleep and then waking up and then just being terrified. So those are my three creepy alien, possibly alien experiences.
Either of you ever experienced what they coin the exploding head syndrome?
I can't say that I have. What about you, Dean?
I actually have. Yeah, I haven't had that happen in many, many years. For me, I think it's been more of a pop, like a really, really quick, sudden, like a mic mm-hmm. popping in my ear. But I've also had the traditional, those times where you feel like you're suddenly yeah. falling. Like I actually have a bad ankle, and I've had, times where I've been drifting off to sleep and then, jolting myself awake because it feels like my ankle's giving out, even though I'm laying down. And then the last thing I will say in terms of that, I've heard, I know Chris, you've heard people call your name when you're awake. But I've also had moments where I'm drifting off and like, I hear someone's you know, calling my name, kind of calling for help, so to speak. And then you wake up and then, you know, obviously no one's there calling your name. So I don't know what that is. It's freaky. Who knows what's going on there.
I have had the experience of people just calling, saying words, just shouting. Usually I can't tell what the word is, but it's just a noise. It's just like a shout. It's just on the point of you going to sleep and you wake up and it's as if they're right next to you, right in front of you. It is very unsettling. Chris, have you ever experienced anything in those realms?
I've had the, you know, you jolt awake when it feels like you're falling. As far as that like sound where you hear like all the pods mm-hmm. dropping at the same time, I personally haven't experienced that. I've never really had any trouble with my sleep other than I had sleep paralysis once. And it was the creepiest thing that I ever experienced.
What was that like? What did you experience?
What I recall from that experience, it happened last year, And Dean, this was around our time we did the sleep paralysis episode, if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So it was probably maybe a couple of months before we recorded that episode on sleep paralysis. And I recall watching some sort of horror movie that night. So I go lay in my bed and I'm falling asleep. And I was sleeping on my side, facing away, like off of the bed. But my head was in a position where like my eyes were just looking down at the floor. So I end up waking up. I couldn't move anything, but I felt so scared at that moment. Like it was like a ridiculous amount of fear and anxiety. Yeah. It felt like, yeah, it's like, okay, I wasn't afraid that I couldn't move. Cause like I registered in my mind very quickly, like, okay, there's sleep paralysis. Okay. Like I'm not going to be able to move, whatever. But it just felt like something was watching me. And it was an overwhelming feeling of like something was just like piercing, like glaring into my soul. And my wife was asleep. I can hear her breathing. My dog is like asleep next to me. I can hear him snoring next to my head. And I'm just laying there and I just have this feeling in my mind. I'm like saying in my head, like, God help me, God help me, God help me. And then I can move. I feel like my toes, like I get sensation in my toes. Okay, I can move my toes. I can move my leg. But now that I know that I could move, it still felt like something was there. And I refused to pick my head up from that position because I had that feeling that if I picked my head up and looked up, I would have seen something that I didn't want to see. Now, I didn't feel anything sitting on me or touching me. It was just something just like
staring. No night hags?
No night hags. It wasn't a sexy night. It just, Reeves, it just felt like something like was just angry. You know, when someone's pissed off at you and you feel them staring at you, that's exactly what it felt like.
Yeah, I've experienced sleep paralysis. When I was younger, I experienced it, and it was literally just not being able to move. And I at one point, I woke up in my bed. I woke up and I looked, and by my wardrobe, I could see a tall shape, just motionless, just there by my wardrobe, just darker than the rest of the room. My windows were open, the moonlight was coming through, and it was just silhouette of a, well, I don't know, your classic something with a hood over it. And I couldn't move, and I was petrified, and I couldn't talk, I couldn't do anything. All I could do was move my eyes. I didn't know what was happening. But this went on when I was, I had moved back home for a while. I was caring for my dad when he was unwell. And I fell asleep. I was in the spare room. I was led on my side, away from the door. And I remember waking up just out of a deep sleep, and I went to get up thinking, oh, I'm just going to make a drink, whatever. And I couldn't move. And then I became aware of these, imagine the Hulk hands holding me around my wrist. My hands were down by my knees, and I could feel these hands around my wrist. I could feel the fingers pushing into my hands, and I could feel these knees, huge knees in the base of my back, pushing into my back. So like somebody's bear hugging you, and they've got your hands around your wrist, and they were gripping really tightly. And I thought, first I thought somebody was, you know, like my old man was grabbing me or whatever. And I kind of became aware that I couldn't see anyone. There was no one there. And then I realized, well, I must be in some sort of sleep paralysis moment, because I'd had it, you know, previously and it years before. And of course, what you do is just slow your breathing down and relax. And as I did that, the whole sensation of this, what I believed to be a person, faded away, and it was gone, and I could move. But it still got my heart going, you know, because at the time, your brain is trying to figure out what's going on. Why does it feel like someone's grabbing me, and why can't I move? But yeah, I've experienced that as well, and it is a bit unsettling. And you know, I think that a lot of it is mental. It's to do with the way our brains work, but also possibly something else. There is some other influences influencing that attack as well, because like Dean mentioned, the feeling of dread, the feeling of being frightened, not being able to see what's in the room and you're getting scared. Many people experience that, and not everyone experiences the same thing. It's not always exactly the same. So there's always something slightly different. You could say that maybe that's because everyone experiences life differently, and so you're going to have your experience is going to be different. But it's, I don't know, it just seems to be tailored to that person. Maybe it is just all in our minds, but maybe it isn't. Maybe there is something else out there. Going back to what we originally spoke about, evil influencer, is maybe that's part of what it is. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Chris?
So the concept of an evil influencer is an interesting one, because if you, you know, take it from a Christian perspective, an Islamic perspective, some parts of the Judaic perspective, there is like Satan, Lucifer, the Muslims call it Shaitan, concept, you know, just shaping and influencing our world to, you know, cause havoc and cause fear. But I mean, in other religions, like I know we previously talked briefly about exorcisms, but I wanted to bring up something real quick in that not just like the main three Abrahamic religions have exorcisms. Hinduism have rituals for casting out evil spirits. Buddhism does, Shintoism. And so it's all of these other religions across the globe that acknowledge some sort of evil that exists out there. Now, is it just one evil entity influencing everything else? I'm not really sure, because if you just look at it from a Christian perspective, yeah, it's Satan. Everything is Satan. Everything is satanic. But what about all of the other ones that are fighting against evil? Now, is it all the same thing, but we categorize it differently? That's how I would personally view it, from more of like an academic perspective. So I would say, like, if there probably is a Satan, well, because I'm Catholic, I won't blaspheme. Yes, it is Satan that is influencing things. And
excommunicated.
No, but seriously, like when you think about it, it's like, why do these things do what they do? Why did I experience what I experienced growing up in a haunted house? Like, what do these things want? Is it just for fun? Do they genuinely hate humanity because we could do certain things that they can't do according to some religious text? But if I had to pick something, I would say there probably is some sort of influential supernatural being that is potentially causing these things to happen, or even ordering these things to happen in from a dimension that we cannot see.
I just wanted to get Dean's perspective on that before I ask my final question. Have you got any thoughts on what Chris just said, Dean?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I think that the dark humor part of me would be like, can somebody please do a show or something really funny where like two different demons from two different religions like try to go haunt somebody who like maybe like Chris grew up in a house where there's like Hindu religion in the house, but there's also Catholic. And then like the two evil entities are like fighting over who gets to possess the person. Like, no, you asshole. I was here first. No, you're just from Hinduism. Go back, you asshole. Like, but I think that Chris, like you probably gave the best possible explanation for what's going on, which is these evil entities, if they do exist, they're like, people just give them different names, but it's the same thing. Like, it's the same originating entity. But I think that, you know, it would be a really fun topic or episode to do someday, or at least I think it would be interesting. You talk about the other side, like talk about demons or evil things from their perspective. 'Cause like when we're in this life as humans, when people do shitty things to other people, it's usually because they had shitty things done to them. Like, you know, they, someone kicked them while they were down. And I'm not saying, I'm not rationalizing that just because you got shat on by somebody means you should go and do the same thing to somebody else. But that's kind of like, you know, a lot of the issues we have in this life with people being bullies or whatever, it like stems from something, frustration on that person's part or whatever. So I guess it could be like Chris was saying, where like they feel jealous of humanity. But I also think that, you know, it doesn't always happen, right? It's not a constant onslaught for humanity to be fighting off these evil forces. So they kind of ebb and flow, right? So like, does that mean that they kind of, these evil forces kind of play the same way as humans, where they have good days and bad days, you know, like maybe like one day they're off like drinking some crazy demon party. And then like the next minute, you know, God throws some piss on them or something. And they're just like, ah, pissed off again. Let's go haunt some humans or possess some humans. So that's just, that's how my brain kind of flows into that. But I'll toss it back to Reeves for the final question.
Thank you for your answer, by the way. But my final question for this episode, it's going to be a bit of a fun, because I'm interested to hear what each of you are going to answer. So I'm going to put a scenario up for you, and I want you to give me your thoughts. So for example, all right, I'm a really rich billionaire. I say to you, okay, you can have a team of people and you can have unlimited funds, but you must dedicate all of your time to doing this one thing. And I will say to you, you can choose the topic that you wish to pursue, all right, within the realms of the unexplained. And you've got all the resources available to you, all the technical people available to you. You just simply got to go out there and do it. So I'm going to start with Chris. What would that thing be?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. Demonic possession. I would go and do deep dives on demonic possession and potentially observe exorcisms, do, you know, academic research on it, and just dedicate a lot of time into that specific topic, because I've always found it fascinating. And the reason I find it fascinating is because, like I said, I mentioned before, I grew up in a haunted house, and I personally think what was in that home and is still in that home is of the demonic. Reeves, I know this will go a little bit off topic of your question. Pressing your time.
That's fine.
Yeah, but I did want to share two stories.
Yeah, go ahead.
I experienced that fall in line with the whole demonic type of topic. So, to give a quick background, in the late 90s, my family, me and my dad, my sister, and my mother, and my aunt, uncle, and cousin, they purchased a home in Queens, New York. It was the late 90s. It was like a duplex type of home where they lived on the downstairs. We lived in the upstairs. Like the moment we moved in, there was like a lot of paranormal activity. You're talking about, you know, weird footsteps you would hear at night walking back and forth in the attic. You'd have not three knocks on your door and no one would be there. So those are the common things that we would experience, like the whole people calling out your name and you being home mm-hmm. alone. It's freaking terrifying. And that segues into one of my scariest experiences that I had in that home that like revolves around that whole concept of someone calling your name out. So whenever that would happen and I would answer it, my mom would reprimand me saying, don't answer it, because in her belief, she's Catholic and she's from the Caribbean islands, the Dominican Republic. She believes like that's the dead calling to you, so you do not answer it. In the fall of maybe 2006 or 2007, I was a junior or senior in high school. So I ended up coming home from class pretty early. I got home maybe around 11 a.m. So I'm completely home alone. My parents are at work. My sister's at school. My aunt and uncle are at work. My cousin is off at university. I go in my room and I'm playing on my Xbox. Then I hear my mom's voice shout my name. And I know my mom's not home. So I ignore it. I hear it again. This time I'm like, what the hell? So I pick up my phone. I call my mom. My mom picks up. She's like, is everything okay? My mom worked in Manhattan at the time. She worked as a full-time nanny. And you can hear the hustle and bustle of the city in the background, the cars, everything. And she's like, is everything okay? I'm like, Mom, I just wanted to check and make sure that you weren't home because I heard your voice calling my name. And she's like, Chris, you know what to do. Ignore it. Don't answer it. Just continue doing what you're doing. I should be home in the afternoon. So I hang up the phone, continue doing what I'm doing. And our kitchen connected to our dining room, and there was a doorway that would connect from the kitchen to the dining room, and that door was open. My mom would close it every now and then while she was cooking just to keep the smell out. So that door was wide open. It's in the late autumn. Our windows are plastic over to keep the warmth in the house, so there's no draft or anything like that. I hear the voice call to me again, my mom's voice. I ignore it. And then a minute later, I hear a huge boom. The door slammed on its own. And when my parents got home that day, I was like, I don't want to live here anymore. Like, we need to do something. We need to get out of here. Because to me, that was kind of like my final straw. And the other story that I wanted to share was something that my mom experienced. And this happened a couple months before we moved out of that home. I think we moved out like in February of 2007. So like I mentioned, my mom is Catholic. Every year she would go around like burning incense and bless, do cleansing throughout the home. So she did our upstairs area. Everything was fine. She went downstairs. She talked to my uncle. My uncle is Muslim. And she asked like, hey, can I do this? He says, you know, I don't care. You're just doing cleansing, whatever. So she goes to through the living room, dining room, does one of the bedrooms, the other bathroom, the bathroom, kitchen, whatever. She gets to a particular bedroom. She starts praying and doing the incense and whatever. And then she said that she felt something like choking her in that room. And she couldn't stand it. She left. She put out her incense. She went back upstairs, didn't bother with it anymore. She's like, clearly something there does not want me there. And it's irritating her. She irritated it, excuse me. So that same night, she said she had a dream that an old lady came to her. And in the dream, my mom was in her bedroom. Everything was the same, same layout, same everything. In her dream, she's wearing the same clothes that she went to bed with. She sees an old lady in her doorway, and this old lady starts yelling at her, like, who the F do you think you are? You're trying to kick me out of my effing home. You're not going to kick me out of my effing home. This is my effing home. If you try this again, I'm going to kill you and your effing family. And then my mom said in her dream, she got up off of the bed and she grabbed the lady by the neck and pinned her against the wall and said, you're not going to effing kill anybody. You're not going to touch my kids. You're not going to touch my family. If anyone's going to kill anyone, I'm going to kill you if you touch my effing family. And my mom said the scariest thing in that dream was that while she had this old lady pinned against the wall with her hands on her throat, she shapeshifted into a little girl begging for sympathy and pleading to my mother to let her go. And my mom said she woke up after that and we ended up moving a couple months later. So to tie it back all together, that is why I would explore, dedicate my time to explore the demonic.
Well, that was the very creepy story. And quickly moving on, I wanted to ask Dean the same question. You've got an unlimited funds. You've got an unlimited team. What is the topic that you want to, you know, pursue?
Or you should have started with me because mine's not going to be as interesting as Chris's. I would do something really. I would do like a really strategic overhaul, and I would try to get as many stories from as many people and catalog them. And I'm talking across the globe. And obviously that would be a massive undertaking, right? You'd need like all kinds, like you said, well, you said I'd have unlimited resources, but like you need teams of people, you need to hire the right people, and you'd have to have like the correct database. But really what I would want to get after is to start looking at the like the strategic level, like the meta view of what all these people are experiencing. It doesn't matter if it's paranormal, cryptid, UFO, because I think that when you like, it's so great when you could sit down and talk to people, like talk, go person to person and hear their stories. And like Chris and I, we've gotten really lucky hearing stories from different people that seem to overlap. Like, for example, the hearing your name called is one. Like, I didn't really know, like, I've heard of that being a thing through my youth, never experienced it myself in a waking state. But I had no idea until I did this podcast that so many people have had stories like that, where they're just dead ass awake and they hear someone call their name and it ends up not being the person, or like that person didn't end up calling them. So that's one like minor example. Another one that Chris and I were talking about was the Hat Man, weirdly enough. Like, I had never heard the Hat Man before in my entire life. And yet we were talking to people from different places across the globe who were talking about seeing this dark figure with a big hat on, like a fedora or like a big brimmed hat. And, you know, we talked to somebody from the Philippines. We talked to somebody from Ireland. I think somebody else from America brought up the same kind of concept, and they were not aware of the other culture's story about this Hat Man. So that, I think that, like, if someone were to do a serious, to make a serious effort to catalog and get these stories down and show the wide swath of similarities across the globe, that maybe you could really start diving into them more deeply and seeing what's really going on. Like, is it, you know, and I'm not saying that like every single case would be paranormal, but I think that you would increase your chances exponentially of getting some real tangible evidence when you start looking at the broad view of what all these people's experiences are and actually taking it in, like, from a serious point of view, like measuring it, asking questions, but also treating it respectfully. Like, you're not trying to debunk, you're just trying to gather information and assess. So that's probably what I would do. Either that or aliens. Aliens would be fun to kind of go after, but I feel like everybody and their mother has been doing that.
Yeah, aliens are the kind of the in thing at the moment. Everyone's looking for UFOs, which is a good thing, and it's also it's a good thing, but it's also a bit of a, everyone's doing it, and it's obviously with AI and stuff, it's very difficult to know what's real and what isn't. But I suppose that goes for everything when it comes to the paranormal. But anyway, guys, I want to thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Paratalk. It's been interesting because I like the way that we've skittered around and touched on a little bit of everything. Before we close out, I just wanted to find out what is happening on the Wandering Road podcast, and have you got anything interesting coming up in the coming months?
So we have quite a few guests lined up for the next few weeks. So that's what we've been mainly doing and focusing on, getting potential guests to come on to share their stories with us. Just recently, we had a friend of yours, Reeves, on the show, Kristen, the Paranorm Girl, had some interesting stories to share there about Bigfoot. So that was a good one. As far as other projects we have coming down the pipeline, we're looking forward to talking to Mr. Trev Downey, the host of the Great Stories podcast. Last time he was on the show, he shared, it was episode 50. He shared a ton of his paranormal experiences growing up in Ireland, and we talked a little bit about fairies and all these other different things. So yeah, it was a good time. But yeah, as far as other things upcoming from the Wandering Road, we're always looking for potential guests to come on. So if you would like to be a guest on our show, you can always reach out to us. We're on social media. We have an email address, which is twroadpodcast@gmail.com. Our Instagram is twroadpodcast. If you search for us on TikTok, we're on there as well. And yeah, go ahead and reach out to us. We're always open to interfacing with the community and speaking with everyone.
Awesome. Well, once again, thanks to you, Chris, and thanks to Dean, and thanks to everybody out there that's stuck with us. It's been a good one, this one. Remember to like and share wherever you might be, because it does help. And until the next episode, talk to you soon.
Thanks, Reeves. Take it easy.
Thanks, Reeves.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.